I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned into Modus Operandi. Old enemies, new friends. That's the theme of today's show after China emerges as the new peace broker in the East, announcing a restoration of ties between rivals Saudi Arabia and Iran. So where does that leave the U.S. on the world stage? And what does that mean for the rest of the world, you know, more commonly referred to as the global South? We'll discuss it next. All right, let's get into the MO. It was a 1-2 punch to U.S. foreign policy after Beijing drops a bombshell. Saudi Arabia and Iran are normalizing relations after nearly a decade of fractured ties. The two Muslim states have been at odds officially since 2016, when both governments shuttered their respective embassies after Iranian protesters stormed the Saudi embassy. So we've seen this dispute play out in various theaters, like in occupied Palestinian territories, Yemen, Syria, and smatterings and clashes over the years. But was this beef really against one another or because of U.S. meddling in the region? Enter the Dragon. Like the film that put Bruce Lee on the pop culture map, China seemed to emerge out of nowhere with this broker detente, putting them at the forefront of peace just weeks after putting forth a peace plan for Russia and Ukraine. So with Uncle Sam asleep at the wheel, it appears the Dragon has awoken. Joining us to discuss is Angelo Giuliano. He is a financial and political analyst, writer, and has been living and working in China for nearly 30 years. Thanks for being with us, Angelo. So, in what seemed to be something that arose out of the blue, Beijing announced it had brokered bilateral restoration of ties between Iran and Saudi Arabia back in March. It was confirmed that each respective country would reopen embassies and normalize relations ASAP. Firstly, on this matter, was it out of the blue? I mean, this news seemed to catch Washington off guard or even by surprise. How long do you think Beijing had been working on this process?
It is not surprising. We saw what happened in the last few days. Actually, Saudi Arabia announced that it was applying to the SCO. So basically, there's already Iran, which is part of the SCO. In order to enter into the SCO, Saudi Arabia had to somehow make peace with Saudi Arabia. So I think this is, you know, those negotiations, they take a long time to happen. And I think this is the result of an effort of decades of work that China has done over the region. How China does when it comes to establishing relationship, it is about building infrastructure, it's about trading. It's not about imposing an order or doing interference in those countries. So I think this peace agreement between Saudi Arabia and Iran is basically the result of a long effort of China that needs to have those two countries to be in good terms, because they are part of the Belt and Road Initiative and there are lots of projects related to infrastructure in the region. So they need to have those two countries to get together and work together, because ultimately what China wants to do in the region is to build stability. Stability is going to be a win-win for everybody. You build infrastructure, countries start trading, and when you do business, business promotes peace and well-being, rather than what we saw in the Middle East over the last decades of confrontation. And that's if you look at what the U.S. did in the region, is a divide and conquer, basically dividing countries between issues, religions, Sunnis against Shias. China is about, it's much, much more rational. China has an approach of, they say, meaning look for what unites us and set aside the differences. And that's the approach that China has used when it comes to Saudi Arabia and Iran. It's focus on what unites us. How can we work together? And of course, we have problems, but we'll solve those problems slowly as we start building up a relationship.
But I mean, why was Washington surprised? Were they not paying attention? U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken tried to downplay China's role in all of this, saying that Beijing only facilitated the meeting and didn't really have a real part in brokering the relations.
I think it is probably one of the reasons is that Washington is a bit outside of the realities. And there's a lot of dispersion when it comes to foreign policies. I think it's also a humiliation. If you think about the Middle East has always been for the U.S., you know, their playground. You know, there was a, you know, they applied the Monroe Doctrine very far from the U.S. They thought that Middle East was their turf. And it is a kind of humiliation. Here you have finally adults in the room. You know, there were kids, like the U.S. like acted like kids, you know, creating chaos in the Middle East. Now you have the adult coming in, like China, and saying, well, how can we work together? You know, those wars, endless wars, it's not working. It's actually, you're being used under this divided and conquer strategy. And it's a kind of humiliation for the U.S. because, and this is a reason they want to downplay what China did. And this is an advanced indicator of what China is actually doing. You see a lot of the countries belonging to the global south that are actually starting to talk to each other, working together, aligning behind this project of BRICS, and aligning also behind this huge project, unique project of infrastructure, which is the Belt and Road Initiative. I think we should really focus when it comes to geopolitics in general. It is about not looking at words, but looking at actions. China is not much into words. It's not into perception. It's about building tangible results. Because you can say whatever you want, you know, but Chinese are very down to earth. You know, I want tangible stuff. You know, are we going to do trade or not? Are we going to build infrastructure? You know, are we going to build a new currency? That's what China is doing. It's not about perception.
Do you think this is merely detente? I mean, is it a first step? Or do you think the Beijing deal has any real staying power?
I think this is for the long term, definitely. I think especially because Saudi Arabia is actually has actually signed a MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, to enter into the SCO. So you will have countries Saudi Arabia and Iran in the same organization. And I think it's very interesting what China has achieved. This is not, in reality, not the first time that China unites two countries, because China has done also a rapprochement somehow to have Pakistan and India under the same organization of SCO. So they did it already. So you start slowly, bit by bit. They managed to have at least to make Pakistan and India, which are long-time enemies, to sit under the same roof, you know, on the same table. And those are achievements already that China has done in the past.
Iran is a Shia Muslim country. The Saudis are considered Sunni or Wahhabi Muslim. We've seen sectarian fighting between the two play out in theaters like Yemen. Respective embassies have been closed since 2016. If this bilateral relationship sticks, what does this mean for the broader Middle East? Or how about Israel, given that Bibi Netanyahu's government is in a very fragile state right now?
When it comes to Israel, I think we need to really question Israel. Is Israel an ally of the U.S. or is it a hostage? I think we need to be really careful just not to see it so too close to the U.S. I think Israel is actually having a more pragmatic approach. And we've seen actually rapprochement of Israel with other Arab countries in the Middle East, because they see that the presence of the U.S., you know, the U.S. might not be there in the long term. We've seen the U.S. escaping Afghanistan. They see the U.S. not being stable ally. So they need to hedge their bets. And somehow I think there's a hope that slowly we might have actually some kind of peace. And maybe with this rapprochement, maybe a long-term solution of the Palestinian issue.
Coming up next, BRICS has been talking about expansion for many months now. So Saudi Arabia normalizing relations with Iran, will this basically secure the addition of the duo into the new economic bloc? We'll discuss it when we return with Angelo Giuliano. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.
For generations, people have been coming here to Kislovodsk to get healthy, taking advantage of the mineral waters and the fresh air. Today, the city is at the forefront of cutting-edge research, helping athletes, not by utilizing that air, but by depriving them from it. Today, we are speaking to the head of the Innovation Center of the Russian Olympic Committee, world-renowned trainer, Alexander Grushin.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. BRICS, the SCO, CSTO, all these acronyms of powerful allied nations anchored by China and Russia. Now that Beijing has announced revived bilateral ties between Iran and Saudi Arabia, are these blocs about to grow? Back with us to continue the conversation is Angelo Giuliano. He's a finance and political analyst with expertise in China. So, Angelo, China announcing this deal came on the heels of Beijing delivering something of a peace plan for Ukraine and Russia. These were back-to-back blows to U.S. foreign policy's unilateral hegemony. On top of all of that, this happens as Xi Jinping accepts his third go as president. Do all these things add up to be what positions China as the 21st century leader? Has the global pecking order begun to shift?
Absolutely. This is a sign that we finally have what I call adult in a room. Adult, why do I call them adults? China is not emotional. The way that Chinese leaders approach geopolitics, they are not looking in terms of working for the next election cycles. They are working for the next generations. China is a long-term view. It's not about when China does alliances, which actually China doesn't like alliance. They like partnership. But those are long-term partnerships. It is not like the U.S. Has done all along through its history. I give you an example. What the U.S. did to Turkey. The U.S. was behind the coup in Turkey in 2016. This is not the way that you should treat your allies. The U.S. is behind the sabotage of Nord Stream, which is going to damage Germany's economy and ultimately which will lead to the deindustrialization of Germany. Well, this is not how you treat your allies. So this is how they treat allies. Somehow it's under threats. It's about threatening. It's not about cooperation. China is a very different approach. It's about how we can work together, and find stability, harmony. And it is very interesting when you look at just country, how Chinese they operate. When you live in China, like I've done in the last almost three decades, I see constantly a society which is working towards harmony and stability. When I look at the approach, especially in the US and also in Europe too, because of democracy, I mean, so-called democracy, which, I mean, it is only by word. It's not in reality. It is not, but it's a system of divide and control. Give the illusion of free choice to the people, and it is extremely emotional. It is marketing. They have done the same as they do with product. They've done to politicians. As a politician, I'm going to tell you what you want to hear. Once I'm elected, I will do whatever I want. I will obey to whoever funds me, not to who elects me. So you see country extremely different approach, one which is very rational. China has a long history. It's solid in terms of values, you know, human being values, family, and so on. And then you have the other side, the collective West, and especially the US, where they're dividing and controlling people over issues which are not important. Identity issues, sexuality, you know, left and right, and so on. And it divides society and it creates chaos. But by doing this chaos, that's how you control society. And you give ultimately a choice, an illusion of choice to people that somehow they have a free choice. They don't, because you put them in front of them, people that were pre-selected, but they are not going to work for them, but they are going to work for the globalist elites.
So BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, this economic bloc is already quite formidable against the G7. Prior to this news, it was said that Iran and Saudi both were interested in joining to form BRICS Plus. Now that detente has been achieved, how likely is it that the pair will join? And what will this do in terms of real economic power?
I think long term, it's highly likely. We see a lot of interest. Every month, you have new countries just showing their interest in joining BRICS. I think when you look at BRICS, the long term game here is about the de-dollarization of the world's economy, because, and this actually will lead to the collapse of the US. The idea here is not about having pushing for the collapse of the US economy. This is not what they want, but it's somehow just having a fairer world, because somehow this is neocolonialism under the disguise of a currency and manipulation of a world's economy. Because the US dollar, the way it was created, was to impose upon the world a currency. And somehow you have a country like the US, which has a trade deficit and which is borrowing money. It's issuing debts and is imposing on countries to buy its debt. So it's a Ponzi scheme that is not meant to be repaid. And slowly countries are understanding why Saudi Arabia and Iran would have to use US dollar, sell, and somehow I'm going to end up with the US dollar, which is not more than the paper itself. You know, it's a promise of exchange against thing. And it's not a debt which is meant to be repaid. It's a Ponzi scheme. Once you stop financing US trade deficit, then the Ponzi scheme falls apart. And this is why these days you have many countries, including US allies, that are actually selling their US bonds, because it's a Ponzi scheme. Now, BRICS, the purpose is long-term purpose is to create a currency which will be backed by tangible goods, you know, commodities, gold, and somehow, you know, empower those countries not to be enslaved by the US dollar, and especially the sanctions that can be used, because the dollar has been weaponized. And it has, they weaponized by using sanctions, and somehow all those, the sanctions, the weaponization of the US dollar has backfired, because this has accelerated the de-dollarization.
Yeah, in fact, another group that's also expanding is the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, or the SCO. It's also anchored by China and Russia. It's effectively both a regional security group as well as an economic one. Riyadh has signed a memorandum signaling that they want what they call to be dialogue partners with the SEO, stopping just short of full membership right now, similar to, you know, Russia being a quasi-member of OPEC. The Saudis and the Chinese are strengthening ties, while Washington is attacking China on TikTok. So what do you say to all of that?
It seems like a little bit a loser attitude, especially when you look at how they're managing with TikTok. China's created a powerhouse. I mean, TikTok, it's better. There's so many users. There's 150 million of regular users in the US, and now they want to ban TikTok. And somehow, if you're American, you want to bypass, you need to use a VPN. So in reality, they said, under the Cold War, it was the USSR isolating itself. Actually, we see it more and more that the collective West is isolating itself, even when it comes to social media. Another example, they are not issuing visas easily to Russians. Russia is not banning people to visit Russia. It's the collective West all along. There's many examples that you can see that the collective West is, and especially the US, is isolating itself by using too many sanctions on too many countries. Then you end up with no countries you can threaten anymore, because countries don't want to have long-term commitments with you, because you're unstable. You're my friend now, but if you don't agree on something, I'm going to sanction you. That's not friends. You know, if friends are like this, why have enemies?
Angela, your final thoughts on all of this, on China, the Saudis, Iran, and the U.S. I think it's especially interesting to hear the perspective of a European-born person having lived in China for nearly 30 years. I mean, what is the end game here? How do you see this all playing out?
I think clearly this is a shift between going from a unipolar world, the U.S. hegemony, and also its control over Europe, over Japan, Australia, Korea, which is a very small proportion of the world's population, probably around 15%. You have this unipolar world, and there's a shift towards multipolar world. It's going to be, actually, when you look at geopolitics, it's going from a dictatorship of the US towards a democracy of the rest of the world. So this is going to empower those countries to make their own choices, just to make sure that they can regain their sovereignty. You know, once you're not actually tied to the US dollar, then you can have your own currency, you regain your sovereignty. So here it's about how we can do this transition. There's a theory of that we call the Thucydides trap, where you had a shift in world's history. You had 16 times, I think, where you had this shift where you had declining power and you had the rising power. And out of 16 times, I think 13 times, it ended up in a war. So the big question now is to see how is the collective West going to be rational enough to make this transition peacefully. But here there's a huge difference, is that this is the first time we have this transition where you have countries in front of you, you have nuclear power countries. So now if you are going to war, you know, this is mutual annihilation. So it's about, are they going to be rational enough? Ultimately, if they really cherish so much democracy, why don't they accept that, you know, they are not alone? And again, maybe the collective West is not exceptional like we see in Hollywood movies. Maybe it's time to be more rational. Just sit down like adults, have adults over under the table. And can we build this this world where we have a mutual project of harmony, of peace, and not my gain against your loss, a lose-lose. You know, here it's about building a world more democratic and working for mutual prosperity, because ultimately, average Joe, either in Russia or China or the US, I'm talking about average Joe, not the elites, is looking to improving its quality of life. How can I bring education to my kids? How can I have healthcare, longevity, tangible things? And this is what we can achieve. You know, ultimately, it's about really having peace in the world, but starting from home, you know, because ultimately, when you look at those geopolitical games, the first victims are Americans leaving the U.S. themselves. Maybe they need to regain, you know, power. You know, it's because democracy means demokratos, power to the people. Maybe they want so much to export democracy. Why don't you give back power to your own people, solve your own problem at home, and then maybe you can work with other countries after. So we need to start from our home and then expand. And how can we work together rather than a zero-sum game that the collective West wants us to go to?
Angelo Giuliano, thank you so much for weighing in on all of this for us. All right, so as you can see, under the Biden administration, their pivot to the Pacific is not without cause. The sharp comments coming from military brass in the U.S. talking about war with China in 2025 is cause for real concern as the U.S. desperately seeks to hang on to hegemony by trying to tame the dragon. That is going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.